these many dates, there's a reason, it seems to me, why they're hiding it. If the White House has nothing to hide, why not come clean and let us know?
Well, it's not relevant. And until it becomes relevant, I don't see the need to go. Anytime anybody brings up something, are we going to go into the paper drill and come up with all the records? It's just not necessary at this point. You know, there's plenty of scandal going on in Congress on both ends. I'm going to plead guilty to Congressman Duke Cunningham from California. I assume that within the next couple of weeks, you're going to plead guilty to Congressman William Jefferson of Alabama or
Louisiana. Actually. But William Jefferson, I think, is the only one you can find on our side, which we've got Bob Ney. I wouldn't be surprised, based on what I've read, if Catherine Harris isn't charged with something soon enough. I'm hoping that she wins Republican nomination for Senate first, and then she's charged with a crime. But, you know, even Goss, the CIA head who just resigned, there are rumors, and I can't tell you whether they're true or not, but they're connected with Brent Wilkes, with Dusty Fargo, number three at the CIA, that he was involved in the poker and prostitutes that Duke Cunningham was involved in. I got no problem with poker, let me say that to those, because I play poker, but we don't have prostitutes at our poker games. Why not just come clean? One of the advantages I think voters will look at in electing Democrats in November is that Republicans don't believe in investigating the president. They think whatever the president done is fine. If he wants to do illegal eavesdropping, they're not going to subpoena him. If he wants to do torture in Abu Ghraib prisons, they're not going to investigate. If he wants to send American citizens to prison without charging them for anything, they're going to stay out. Democrats believe at least the public should know these things, and then we can decide whether it's good or bad. What's wrong with that?
Well, we don't believe for one minute that the Democrats want to investigate just so the public should know. I mean, if you look at John Conyers' website, who stands to be the next chairman of the Judiciary Committee, if you go to his official congressional website, if the Democrats take over control of the House of Representatives, he's already put out there before the investigation that impeachment is part of the agenda. Now, in a way, I sort of hope, perversely, that he has the chance to do this, because just as I think the Republicans probably politically overplayed their hand with the Clinton impeachment, I think Mr. Conyers and the Democrats will drive themselves off the cliff if they do it to the president under the circumstances that they're looking at, and it will be a net gain, and a White House that's going to look very hard for us to hold in 08 will probably be much more easy to hang on to if the Democrats overplay their hand like that.
Well, I hope John Conyers becomes chairman of the Judiciary Committee, too. I'm glad to hear that you hope that.
I said in a perverse way.
I hope in a real way, because this is a man who's determined to investigate. And I say investigate. Let's see what happens.
He's determined to impeach. He has it on his website.
Look, I believe the president should be impeached as well. I've announced it here, because it seems to me that any time you violate the Constitution of the United States by illegal eavesdropping on American citizens and you say you're above the law, then, you know, to me, that's grounds for impeachment. But I agree we need the facts first. Let me ask you this, because it's very interesting to me that the guy they're using to replace Porter Goss, Michael Hayden, is a guy who the president liked because he was defending the eavesdropping program. He's a guy who the president claimed that four Democrats were informed, the ranking Democrat on both intelligence committees, Jane Harman in the House and Senator Rockefeller, West Virginia, and the minority leaders. But when Jane Harman asked Michael Hayden, again, one of the four Democrats that's supposed to be in the know, to talk about this, Hayden started to talk with her, and the White House said, no, you can't talk with her. We can't let Americans know what we're doing. Obviously, it's against the law. Let me ask you this. The president is choosing a man who is supporting a program that even Republicans, many of them, people like Arlen Specter, believe is against the law. Isn't this the wrong man for the wrong job, as another famous Republican said recently?
What was he, Hoekstra?
I think it was Peter Hoekstra,
Hoekstra
of Michigan.
Said that yesterday on one of those shows. I don't think so. I don't know what motivates Congressman Hoekstra on this. In fact, it's bizarre. This is a guy who's got a stellar career. He's been in intelligence his entire career.
Peter Hoekstra. I'm talking about Michael Hayden. Because I like Peter Hoekstra.
General Hayden.
All right. And
I would expect the Democrats to come up with some reason why they want to quiz him at length, and I would expect them to delve deeply into the what was the decision-making process behind and what was the justification for the uncourt-approved wiretaps. There's no doubt that that is perfectly predictable that will be their agenda. Hoekstra, on the other hand, took a different route. He said, well, this man's in the military, and I just can't understand why we'd want to have somebody who has been a career military with a stellar record running the CIA, which is a civilian agency. it doesn't strike me as anything that that rings true there. And sure enough, with the exception of a couple high-profile Democrats, Dick Durbin among them, who has already endorsed Michael Hayden, many of the other Democrats are saying, well, he's been in the military, therefore he's unqualified to run the CIA. What's that all about?
To me, it isn't about the military. I have to admit, to me, my problem with Michael Hayden does have to do with his eavesdropping program, because here's a program that has no basis in statutory law, all right? It's not in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It's not in anything the courts have done. The entire basis for this program, according to the President of the United States, is my favorite document, of course. I got a new one, by the way. The Constitution of the United States. The President claims it's in here. But no one on the right-wing talk shows, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, the President of the United States, McClellan, Tony Snow, can point to where it's in here, because, of course, all it says is the President's commander-in-chief of the military. It doesn't say that Congress can't regulate it, because Congress can regulate it. So they won't even tell us where it is. The best joke I heard about this eavesdropping program was that it's because Congress authorized the war in Iraq that allows the president to eavesdrop on American citizens. It doesn't make any sense. And I think the American people, when they understand this, they understand it's not about surveillance of Al-Qaeda, which we all support, but surveillance beyond the law, beyond the Constitution. I can't think of a worse man for the Republicans. Frankly, I'm glad they nominated him, because I'd like to bring this issue to the American people.
Well, there's no doubt it's going to be investigated, and we're going to find out a lot more about it. General Hayden will be questioned at length. Senator Specter, who is not known as a team player in the Republican Party, is going to facilitate that and ensure that it happens.
Will he issue any subpoenas?
Oh, I don't know. You'll have to ask Senator Specter. You worked for the Judiciary Committee at a time. You tell me.
I will tell you. He won't. Okay. The Republicans have not issued a single subpoena in 5.5 years. I don't think they'll start now. In contrast, by the way, the same Republican Congress issued more than 1,000 subpoenas against Bill Clinton, including his private sex acts. So to the Republicans, the private sex acts of the president are relevant, but whether or not he's breaking the Constitution, not a big deal.
Well, all I can say is that those 1,000 subpoenas, obviously the Clinton White House was not being as cooperative with the Congress as the Bush White House is. They only subpoena when they want information that they can't get. When they get the information, there's no need for a subpoena. Sorry.
Well, and then obviously they won't give us the information. They won't even tell us how many times that Abramoff has attended White House functions. Let me invite you all to call in, to express whatever you wish to express, to join in the debate. You can agree with me, you can agree with Mike, you can disagree with both of us. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I also want to bring up something that's quite troubling that just occurred locally. It just happened today. If you haven't heard about it, in Fairfax County, Virginia, we don't know all the details yet, but apparently two men were armed. They ambushed a police station. They shot at least three people. One police officer is dead. Another is injured. I'm not sure of the condition of the third man. And a lot of people are wondering about gun control, about whether or not it should be so easy to get guns in Virginia and nationwide. If you want to comment on that, I want to invite you to join in as well, 888-488-MARK. And also want to talk about the Republican tax cuts that occurred this week. We are in the largest deficit in American history. And an interesting study by the Congressional Budget Office shows that it wasn't the war in Iraq, it wasn't Hurricane Katrina, it isn't Homeland Security, it isn't 9/11. The entire deficit can be explained by the tax cuts. And if you're a fiscal conservative, my question is going to be after the break to Mike Lane, if you're a fiscal conservative and you don't believe in passing on our debts to our children, shouldn't you vote Democratic here in November? We'll address all of these issues, 888-488-6275, right after this PSA.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish,
and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, discussing the issues of the day with my friend Mike Lane. We don't agree on much except the need to discuss these issues with you. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can join in the debate if you wish. We were talking before the break about the recent attack that occurred in Fairfax County. Apparently, two men jumped out of a wooded area and attacked a police station, ambushed it, shot two police officers, one civilian dispatcher. One of the police officers apparently is dead. The other two are injured. And, of course, the question comes up. The Washington Post reported they were either automatic or semi-automatic weapons. Automatic weapons have been illegal since 1933. Semi-automatic weapons, though, is one of those issues that Democrats and Republicans fight about. Democrats believe that really you don't really need semi-automatic weapons to go hunting. To shoot a deer, to shoot a bird. And yet we see how these can be used for these vicious crimes. Do you think gun laws need to be changed or better enforced?
Well, Mark, first of all, this is a very tragic event.
It is.
And both of our thoughts and prayers, I'm sure, go to the family of the victims involved.
Absolutely.
Here. A very, very sad thing. We don't have all the information yet. And if indeed the preliminary reports that we have, that it was automatic gunfire, perhaps semi-automatic gunfire, we're not sure, are true, that, you know, obviously casts it in a certain light. Currently, I think, and I don't know everything there is to know about gun control, currently I think fully automatic weapons are highly restricted. In order to own one of them as a private individual, you have to be investigated pretty heavily on your background, and you have to have a collector's license in order to acquire one of those things.
So, and you support those laws.
So, yeah, I think there's no reason why the average Joe, who we don't know anything about, should have a M60 machine gun or anything like that. Or
I agree.
Or a caliber machine gun.
I agree. So let's talk about semi-automatic. Because, I mean, after all, if you squeeze your finger fast enough, you could still shoot, you know, 10 bullets in 10 seconds. Probably faster.
Yeah, probably. Well, you can put out a lot of firepower, that's for sure. There's any number of different reasons for owning a firearm. It's not just hunting. Some people own them for self-protection as well. We don't even know if these were rifles or handguns.
I don't know any semi-automatic handguns. There's a Glock.
Yeah,
I mean, okay,
yeah,
so you can call that a handgun, if you will.
A Colt 45, a 9mm, bang, 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 you empty the entire magazine, and they're gone. And you really, when you're using it for protection, you want to have that semi-automatic effect. You don't want to have to reload or recock or re-something every time you fire that thing. If you're using it for protection and somebody's threatening, you need to be able to put more than one round out of that barrel at one time. So, it's a very difficult situation. I'm not ready to really offer a definitive opinion other than the fact that right now there's nothing that I've seen that would cause me to call for a change in current law. Under the information that we do know that firearms are used every day by innocent citizens to protect themselves and used effectively to protect themselves against predators.
Well, the question is whether semi-automatic firearms. But
right.
It seems to me that one of the issues that we fought about when I was working in the Judiciary Committee was who has committed a crime should be able to get a gun. The idea, the Republicans at one time said that if it's a crime of domestic violence and it's old, you still should be able to get a gun. In my view, if you've committed any crime of violence, that's it. You lose your right to own a gun. A right, it's a privilege, I guess, not a right. Mm-hmm. And well, no, I don't want to give to people with a criminal record, particularly a violent criminal record, the ability to own a gun. Do you support me on that?
I think it's more of a right than a privilege, but it's a right that you can forfeit by behaving in such a manner that does not comport with civilized society and the rules of civilized society. Whether you want to, you know, I guess it depends really on what is the definition of a violent crime. If somebody is convicted of kicking the dog, you know, on the street, is that it probably is a violent crime, but yeah, I don't
Let's
think
talk
that's
about someone who's violent toward human beings.
Someone who has committed an act of domestic violence, I concur. They're clearly somebody who has an inability to control their temper.
Right.
Somebody who has some emotional difficulty, and I would agree with you, that person should probably not have the right to own firearms.
I'm glad we agree on that, and our thoughts and prayers do go out to the victims. We wish the two that have been injured a speedy recovery. Again, you're welcome to join in the debate. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I want to switch topics a bit and talk about the tax cuts, because there was a very interesting study in the Congressional Budget Office. This is a nonpartisan office. In fact, if anything, they're appointed by the Republicans who control Congress. But I'd be the first to tell you they're neither Republican nor Democrats. These are number crunchers. They work well for both parties. And what they showed, it was very interesting, was that approximately 50% of the increase in debt, and the increase in debt, by the way, has gone $600 billion a year from $200 billion surplus to a $400 billion deficit. It's caused by the tax cuts. And in fact, they did a study looking after 2008, 2010, when a lot of the tax cuts expire. And President Bush wants to extend those tax cuts. If he doesn't extend the tax cuts, if they're allowed to expire, guess what? We go back to a surplus. We start paying back some of the debt. We don't leave this massive headache for our children. But Bush wants to do that. And here's my question. If you're a fiscal conservative, you're the kind of guy who pays your credit cards every month, you don't believe that your children should have to pay for your own mistakes. If you're a fiscal conservative, shouldn't you vote for the Democrats this fall?
Well, I think that the Republican Party has strayed way too far from their fiscal conservative foundation that they have been campaigning on and successfully identifying themselves with for the last 40 years, essentially since the Lyndon Johnson started the Great Society spending in the early to mid 60s. That was when the Republican Party started to identify themselves as the party of fiscal discipline, fiscal conservatism, and did so fairly well.
Not anymore.
They have, unfortunately for themselves, they have allowed that issue to get away. And they've done it because they have not been true to their core beliefs. They have not honored their foundation. They have not been true to their constituents. And they have been spending, in ways that have been borderline, not even borderline. They've been irresponsible in many different ways. Now, the question is, what will the Democrats bring? The Democrats have never really provided us with any history of fiscal responsibility. They spent 40 years fighting it. When we finally had a balanced budget and even a modest surplus in the last years of the Clinton administration, it was only because the Republican Congress brought Clinton to the table kicking and screaming after he couldn't decide when he wanted to balance the budget. So perhaps, perhaps I'm very disappointed and discouraged with the Republicans, but I don't see an alternative out there, Mark. Tell me when they've been responsible before.
It's simple logic, okay? There was a Republican Congress under Bill Clinton, a Republican Congress under George W. Bush. Largely the same Congress, largely the same people. Under a Democratic president, we had the biggest surplus in 40 years. Under George W. Bush, the biggest deficit ever in American history. The only difference is we had a Democratic president. Now, what will the Democrats do differently? Well, part of the plan for America that we have put out by Nancy Pelosi is something the Democrats did. It's called pay as you go. In other words, you want to do a spending program, you increase taxes to pay for it. You want to cut taxes, you cut spending to match it. There's an interesting study that just came out that shows that actually the party that cuts taxes tends to increase spending, and the party that raises taxes tends to cut spending. And I think it's because, well, it's easy. It's kind of like a drug. It's like crack. It's easy to cut taxes, and it's easy to increase spending. Everybody loves paying less taxes. Everyone loves increased spending. It's kind of like when you max out on your credit card, you get to have all kinds of fun until the bill comes due. and our children are going to have to pay twice the amount of taxes. Already, the interest on the national debt has become one of the largest budget items. Someone has to pay the piper. The Democrats have put forward in their plan, pay as you go. We will not spend another penny toward the government deficit unless it's paid for. Do you support pay as you go? Do you think Republicans should take a page from the Democrats and also support it?
Well, more or less. I think we read the same article on this correlation between the increased spending and increased taxes or vice versa.
I think it was a Reagan man who did the article, actually.
Actually, it's the current – it's somebody – I think he's the head of the Cato Institute.
Right.
No liberal think tank there.
That's right.
Institute. And he did find that there was a correlation, although he couldn't specify why, but he found that there was a statistical correlation between reducing revenues and increasing spending. And his hypothesis was that once you reduce spending, you felt so good about yourself that you then went out and spent more money or something like that. Well, there's no correlation there. There's no way of proving that. What it has proved is that the Congresses and the administrations that have cut taxes have not imposed the fiscal discipline necessary to cut the spending after that. The theory is a great theory if human nature will kick in. The theory is that if you take the money away from them, they will not spend it. Well, clearly the study has shown that if you take the money away from them, they will spend it anyway.
Obviously we have to take the people away that we have a new Congress in there that will be disciplined, that won't be saddling our children with all this debt.
I'll make you happy and I'll criticize the president one more time. I find it absolutely inexplicable that in 5.5 years of his presidency, he has not vetoed a spending bill once. He hasn't vetoed anything.
He hasn't vetoed anything.
But he hasn't vetoed a spending bill once, and that is probably the single largest surprise and disappointment of his presidency
Interesting is that even Republicans, now if you look at his approval rating, which is 30 to 32%, maybe 34%, what's interesting is not only do 90-plus percent of Democrats oppose him, 75% of independents, but only 75% of Republicans support him. He's lost a quarter of Republican support. And I would suggest that one of the main reasons, I think you'd agree with me, is this failure to have fiscal discipline. But what are the Republicans doing now? They are extending the tax cuts. They're not cutting spending. They're not cutting the bridge to nowhere. They're not cutting pork. They are cutting taxes, and they're bringing us into a worse fiscal nightmare. You know, a lot of Americans voted for Ross Perot in the 1990s, and the one thing – Ross Perot was largely crazy as far as I'm concerned, but the one thing he was absolutely right about, the Perotistas were right about, were budget deficits. Don't you think those Perot voters need to vote for a Democratic Congress now?
Well, you know, actually, they need to vote for a Republican House member. You are probably aware of, I'll refresh your memory if you missed it in the last couple hours or last couple days, the Senate, the president asked the Senate to appropriate some more money for the war and to appropriate some more money for Katrina. I think he asked for $109 billion or something like that. So what did the Senate do? They anteed up the $109 billion. Then they got together at their little pork fest and they added another $17 billion on top of it that the president didn't want. And then they mixed in the tax cuts to make it a politically unpalatable bill for the president to veto if he should, because for a mere $17 billion, he gets the tax cuts, which are really driving our economy and making our economy so strong. Now, the good thing is that Speaker Hastert finally stepped up to the plate last week on Friday, and he declared the Senate bill dead on arrival. So they're not even going to negotiate that. The $17 billion is out, and let's negotiate the real details of the bill. The Senate, of course, will act like crybabies. They'll kick and scream, and they'll moan, and they'll negotiate. But the Speaker of the House, the Republican Speaker, has declared the Senate strategy to be dead on arrival, and I hope he sticks with it.
Here's the difference between George Bush and Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan would veto those kinds of bills. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Feel free to join in the debate. You don't have to agree with either one of us, but we do want to hear from you. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
What kind of man are you?
I'm a father.
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma? Schmasthma. I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Hey, Daddy.
Hi, Dad.
Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
A rite of passage, a challenge to join the elite. And if you succeed, if you can master your fear, outsmart your enemy, and never yield even to yourself, you will be changed forever. The few, the proud, the Marines.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The November 2006 elections really aren't that long from now. They're only about 6 months away. And the question is, do you support a government run entirely by Republicans? Or do you think that, hey, maybe we need a change, maybe we need a check and balance, maybe we need a Congress and a president where the president will veto an occasional bill and where the Congress will issue an occasional subpoena? 888-488-6275, 888-488-MARK. I believe we have Martha from Fairfax on the line. Is she on the phone yet? Not quite yet. She's coming in just a second. Again, any of you are welcome to call. I'd like to address the issue of Karl Rove, because I've been saying for a long time I think he ought to be indicted. This is a man. We will find out soon, and I hope he is, because this is a man who largely has been in control of the domestic machine. Even John DeUlio, who used to run the president's faith-based office, a Republican, said that Karl Rove's in charge. It's all about propaganda. They really don't have a domestic issues agenda. It's all about looking good. And one of the things that Karl Rove did to look good was, we know, it's not denied now, that he was talking about Valerie Plame Wilson, Joe Wilson's wife, in order to discredit Joe Wilson, who pointed out that Bush was lying in a State of the Union speech on aluminum tubes. We know he said it. The only question now is whether Karl Rove is to be believed that he forgot he said it. He has a foggy memory. Do you buy that?
Well, you're talking about a guy who probably has 150 conversations a day. 150 conversations a day, probably 6 days a week, over 4 years. The ability to perhaps not be clear on any one given conversation is not unusual. I don't remember everything that I've said to everybody on every single circumstance for the last 5 years, and I don't have that many conversations.
But, Mike Lane, how often are you disclosing the secret identity of a CIA agent?
Well, we don't know that it was exactly a disclosure of a secret, CIA agent. In fact, we know that Ms. Plame was not undercover at the time and hadn't been undercover for 6 years.
So that's not true.
She doesn't even meet the definition of what an undercover agent is. But your question isn't about whether or not she meets the technical definition. Your question is, in an attempt to damage or sabotage Joe Wilson, did he release some information?
Classified information.
Classified information. And we don't know. Certainly,
I think we know he released it. We just don't know whether he remembers releasing it or not. I mean, Scooter Libby has said so. Scott McClellan, who lied to us, said he talked to Karl Rove and said Karl Rove said to his face he had nothing to do with this. Scott McClellan told the whole press. And then later on when they said, Scott, you lied to us, didn't you? He's like, I can't talk about this now. I mean, come on. He did disclose it. The only question now is whether he remembers doing it or not.
In reference to Press Secretary McClellan, the president has made it a replacement there, and I think it's going to be a very good replacement for the administration.
He told us the truth. Let me ask you this.
No, not because he told us the truth.
Well, you're right. Normally he didn't. But let me ask you this. When Scott McClellan told the press All right. I spoke personally to Karl Rove. I spoke personally to Scooter Libby. And they both denied to my face that they had any involvement with Valerie Plame Wilson. Do you think Scott McClellan at that point was telling the truth? Because I think he is. I think he's telling the truth, but Libby and Rove are lying to him. What do you think?
We don't know. We were not privy to those conversations, so
true.
We don't know.
I'm asking you to speculate.
I believe that the press secretary was probably relating the conversation as he recollected it.
I think he was, too.
Whether or not he recollected it exactly as it went down is something we're going to find out.
You know, an unequivocal no isn't that hard to recollect. But let me go to Martha from Fairfax. She's on the phone now. Martha, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes, I'd just like to comment about the shootings here that have taken place in Fairfax County today.
Yes, yes.
And I just want to say that as a single woman, I certainly can understand and appreciate someone's need to own a gun. I mean, there are enough creepy people around. However, I am concerned about the lack of regulation or the lack of control of it. I'm not about taking away people's rights. I believe they should have a right to it. I just want to have some control. And the NRA acts as if they are really for going for the books, laws that are on the books, and they're all behind that. But in reality, a lot of times they're not, and that's what I think is the confusion. For instance, before Congress broke up last year, they passed a bill which would affect anything like the cyber attack that we had a couple of years ago, that a person who has been killed as a result of an accident and it was involving an illegal gun sale cannot go back and sue the owner of that gun shop. Now, that would sound like, you know, you need to have protection against, you know, people in a store.
Let me ask that question to Mike here. I mean, if it's an illegal sale, I'm not talking about legal sales.
Right.
If it's an illegal sale, in other words, this person, because of, say, he has a criminal record, mm-hmm. by law is not supposed to own a gun. And the gun shop owner does an improper check. He doesn't do the proper background check. He makes a mistake. Let's say he's negligent, not purposely, but he makes a mistake and he negligently sells a gun to someone who shouldn't own a gun. Shouldn't he be civilly liable for that act?
Well, let's take the first one that you didn't ask, which is if he does it intentionally. And the answer is he ought to be prosecuted.
I agree.
And put in jail for a long time.
I agree. But shouldn't he be civilly liable if he's negligent? If he doesn't do the background check he's supposed to do under the law and sells to this guy, shouldn't he be civilly liable? That's the bill that Martha from Fairfax is talking about. The Republicans voted down.
I don't see any problem with holding somebody who's truly negligent for any reason liable for that negligence. I really don't see any problem with that. Where the difficulty is when you extend that and then you start saying, well, we're going to hold the manufacturer liable because they knew or should have known that the gun that they manufactured would be used for an illegal purpose and used to harm somebody, that's when you've gone too far.
Well, the manufacturer laws that I've read about were selling things that whose only purpose is an unlawful purpose. I mean, when you have a certain kinds of silencers that are only can be used really for criminal acts, or certain kinds of you know things that, I understand you need a silencer for hunting. I understand on a rifle, but you know for a handgun that can't be used for hunting, that's used for protection. I mean, there are times when the manufacturer themselves can be negligent, can't they? They don't have a safety lock, say, on a gun, and a child shoots himself. Isn't that something the manufacturer should be required to do?
I don't think so. I think the owner of that weapon should be required to keep it safely locked away from children. And, you know, there's absolutely no excuse if you're a gun owner and you've got children in the house who are likely to come across it and don't understand the nature of that weapon, then it's your responsibility, not the manufacturer's responsibility, to keep it away from the children.
Well, this is just something I want to bring up. The way I feel is that somebody, if they do something illegally, they should be charged with that crime. Just like if you charge something with a person that goes down and shoots somebody, then they should be charged with that crime. Just if somebody in the store sold something illegally, they should be charged in some way. But the Congress has not allowed that to happen. They say, well, you know, you did something wrong, but we're just going to, you know, we're going to ignore it. And that's
part of the problem, Martha, is that our laws aren't strong enough. There's, for example, a loophole in the gun show laws. There are certain regulations that I support. They, a lot of them come from Jim Brady, former press secretary to Ronald Reagan, who was shot at the same time that Ronald Reagan was shot, that require store owners to do background checks. But if you go to a gun show, and I got to tell you, these gun shows, they have massive amount of weapons, including some things that I think are probably illegal. They're not regulated. Frankly, I want to send my undercover cops there and not some other places where they are. You know, in these gun shows, they don't have to do these background checks, and that's a loophole in the law. I think the loophole should be closed. The NRA is fighting it. What do you think about the gun show loophole?
I think there's a way of doing this halfway. And, Martha, I hope that this is something that you'd support. The reason there's a gun show loophole is because 99% of these people are small dealers. They get a table. They spend their $100 to get a table, whatever it is. They bring in their 5-6 pieces that they've collected. They're trying to maybe sell one and trade up or buy one. They're collectors. You know, they're just small-time guys. And they don't have the resources, and the money is not in the sale to justify the background check. What you can do, and what I would support, is to require the gun show promoters to offer it as a service. Anybody who wants to buy at the gun show can pay a fee at the gun show. They can be background investigated, insta-check on the spot, and they can be given a card or a coupon or something like that, and then they can take that card or coupon of approval if they pass the background check to any vendor, and they would be allowed to purchase it then if they had that.
That would work.
That seems to me to be a reasonable way around the small dealer
problem. That would work, or the federal government could have a 1-800 hotline where you could call in, and the person could input their own whatever, Social Security number or whatever information, driver's license number.
But all this costs money.
I understand. And a tax on guns would pay for it, and it wouldn't have to be that high a tax. But it seems to me it's the kind of thing, if you want to own a gun responsibly, you should be able to protect against those who don't want to own it responsibly. We have taxes on things, if you buy certain toys these days, they can't be have eyes or ears or whatever that fall off and a child can choke on.
Right.
Now, that is added to the cost of the toy, and every parent knows that when they buy a toy, it may cost a little bit extra to prevent a choking hazard. I would think if parents are willing to pay 5% more to prevent a choking hazard, the gun owners should be able to pay 5% more to prevent these criminals from getting guns like the ones I hope didn't happen, but like the ones I'm afraid may have happened today in Fairfax County.
Also, and we'll find out that.
Also, yes, I just want to bring up a comment also that when I consider how like organizations like CEOs run companies and stuff, I just think how the NRA is run. I mean, every time someone like this, an incident like this happens, it makes the NRA look really dumb and really stupid. To me, you would want everything to be done as ethically and as legally to make your organization look good, and it doesn't. It makes them look bad, and it makes them look stupid. You know, just do things right and make it everything right, and it will make your... You won't be the laughing stock anymore.
I think, Martha, the NRA is not being responsible to Americans. They're being responsible to their members, which they have a right to do as a political organization. And their members want as few restrictions on guns as possible. And that's why they do what they do. It's that simple.
And actually, Martha, the NRA is perhaps one of the more, let's say there are other organizations that are pro-gun rights organizations that would consider the NRA to be run by a bunch of squishes.
Martha, thank you very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Folks, if you want to call in as well, the toll-free number is 888-488-6275, 888-488-MARK. One last question before we go to break, Mike. We register our cars. Mm-hmm. Now, every one of us, we go in, we get a registration. It's right there in the glove box. Cars can be dangerous. They do kill people. They also have legitimate uses. What would be wrong with a national gun registry? Would you support that?
No, I wouldn't, because ultimately one of the reasons for the Second Amendment, which allows the general public to keep and bear arms, is that the founding fathers thought that ultimately there may come a time when the government would be too oppressive and would need to be replaced through a revolution. I still believe that even after 250 years of history in this country, that possibility exists down the road someplace, and I would wholly and completely object to the government knowing where each and every firearm was in this country, because it precludes the possibility of the people affecting their own freedom.
You know, maybe 200 years ago, an individual with a firearm could beat off a military with tanks. 200 years ago, there were no tanks. Maybe they could beat off the military. Not today. The military has tanks. I think that idea is frankly ludicrous. The government is already taking Americans, secretly hiding them away without trials. we've got enough problems in that regard. It seems to me that if the government knows where every car is, they have a right to know where every gun is. And frankly, we could trace back a lot of crimes. And hopefully, I don't know what's going to happen with these people, but I want to trace it. I want to find the people who did this, and I want to prosecute them. And some of the best ways to do it is to know where guns are. I don't think that law-abiding gun owners have anything to fear by registration any more than law-abiding car owners. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
I think you should wear a tie.
Dad, nobody wears ties to school.
Tie says you're serious. It'll make a good impression. And remember, you're there to study.
To learn, and to make something of myself. I got it.
Almost half of all UNCF students are the first in their family to go to college.
They have some great architecture classes.
Dad, I'm not really interested in architecture.
Well, keep your options open. And remember, no girls until your
work is done.
And I'd make sure that I got my lunch.
Dad, you're not going. I am.
I know.
Listen, you better get going. Don't want to be late the first day in.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're the first to go, you're going for a lot of people. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
Magellan? No. Well, who knows what Magellan did?
Sail around the world.
Right. Now.
Sometimes, a child who doesn't seem interested is really a child with a speech or hearing problem.
Blackbeard? Who said Blackbeard? And what did Blackbeard do? He was a
pirate.
Time and again, it's been shown that a young student's ability to read and learn begins with speech and language and hearing skills.
Jamie, are you with us? Who can tell us?
He wanted to go to India.
Many communication disorders can be detected early and corrected, so learning and literacy skills can develop normally. Make sure your child has the speech, language, and hearing abilities to keep up in class. For more information, visit ASHA.org, a public service message from the American Speech, Language, Hearing Association and this station.
A new route to
Asia!
Good.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today's Debate Monday. Mike Lane is the president of Intellifit Strategies. It's his job to get Republicans elected. It's my job to try to stop him. And one of the things that we're doing is examining what the Republican and Democratic plans are in November. The Republican plan, I guess, is more of the same. They want to have more tax cuts, more heavy spending, more government not checking what the president is doing. The Democrats have set forth a very clear plan. Pay as you go, right? So no more deficits. They also have raising the minimum wage and also allowing the government to negotiate prescription drugs. Well, we have someone on the phone. Before we get to them, though, let me just ask you about those two parts of the Democratic plan. Isn't it time to raise the minimum wage? It hasn't been raised since 1997.
You know, it probably wouldn't even be harmful to raise the minimum wage now because almost nobody is working for the minimum wage anymore. The market has overtaken the minimum wage, and I'm perfectly comfortable with, you know, I walk into a restaurant or something like that, and they're advertising, you know, starting jobs for $9.25 an hour, things like that. Clearly, the minimum wage at $5.75 or whatever, or $6.30, whatever it is now, has been overtaken by the economy. And if you raise it a couple dollars, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't kill the jobs because nobody's working for that wage anymore. But it's unnecessary because the market has proven that people will get jobs relative to what the market pays.
Let's go to Mike from Fairfax. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me on. I'd just like to bring up what the previous caller said. Article 2 of the Constitution, can you read it to me, Mark?
I can. I have it right here. I always carry in my pocket the Constitution.
Fourth word I'd like you to focus on.
I think it has, the fourth word is probably militia, but let me read the entire thing. Yes.
Is it Article 2 or Amendment
2? Amendment 2.
Amendment 2.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is the only amendment in the Bill of Rights that actually has a prefatory clause. All the other ones are just free speech. right to be secure, right to have counsel. This one actually has a reason given. What do you take? How do you take that, Mike?
I just want you to point out that it's the regulated militia that has the right to bear arms, not the individual, what? If you read it this way.
And in fact,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. And that's, in fact, how the Supreme Court has ruled thus far for the last 200 years, that a well-regulated militia does have the right to bear arms, but not every individual.
Actually, the Supreme Court anyway, has kept hands off this one for, what has it been, 60 years or something
like that? But their last ruling was a militia and not an individual.
I look forward to them re-evaluating this whole thing and seeing what they say. I suspect with the recent appointments to the court that we're going to get something that protects the rights of the individual.
That's another reason, folks, why we need a Democratic president in 08. Let me ask you more about the Democratic plan than in 06, because so far you've agreed with it. You've agreed with the fiscal discipline, pay-as-you-go system. You've agreed with raising the minimum wage. There's two more parts of the plan. One has to do with beefing up Homeland Security. It has to do with more frequent cargo checks. Right now, about 0.04% of cargo is checked. It has to do with better checks in airports. As I'm sure you realized recently, they just did a check of about 30 airports across the nation, and they all failed. Don't you think we need to beef up Homeland Security? Don't you support that part of the Democratic plan?
Well, I never supported the federalization of the airport security people to start with. I thought that was a really dumb idea. I thought that private contractors could and should do it better than the federal government ever would. And now that we've had the federal system doing it for 5 years, it's clear that I was probably right on that. We ought to get rid of the entire TSA or whatever the heck they are, reprivatize these people, and hold these contractors accountable for having good training and effective security at the airports.
Well, I agree with you. The bosses of the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, are lousy. They are currently the federal government run by your party. If we had better bosses who were more accountable, because we don't have much accountability in this administration. In other words, the TSA, if he can't keep 20 airports safe, fire the guy. That's why it should be a government program, so that we can have accountability. But apparently they're not accountable now.
Well, they are accountable, and that's why we have checks like this to make sure that any holes that exist are caught by the people who are going through. It's the same thing with enforcing, you know, any particular thing. Fair housing laws, you send checkers out there.
Right.
Alcohol purchased by minors, you send checkers out
Shouldn't
there.
Shouldn't the head of the TSA...
Airport security, you send checkers out
there. Right, and they failed. They got a big F. They got 0 out of 20. Shouldn't somebody be fired?
Well, it wasn't 0 out of 20. It was 20 out of 20 had a hole in it someplace. Nothing is ever going to be 100% secure. It just can't happen.
Yes, but they're 0% secure.
Well,
I mean, if 19 out of 20 airports had passed the test and one hadn't, that would be different.
But what's the
failed.
But the definition of passing the test is 100%. You can be 97% secure and have failed this test. You know, they can send repeated checker after checker after checker, and if you catch 98% of them, but yet two go through, that's a failure on this test because it only takes one time.
Seems to me amazing that none of these checkers, none were caught. That's extreme. I support more Homeland Security. Let's go to Karen from Centerville. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. First of all, I want to express my deepest sorrow to the police officer who lost his or her life.
I think it's her life, actually. I think it was a female police officer.
And the police officer wounded and their families and the entire Fairfax police community. They're all our family, too. I hope that this will spur some further energy into making sure that we stop guns from getting into the wrong hands.
What would you do, Karen? What law would you support?
First of all, I would support a background check that must be completed for every single sale of guns, whether they're sold by licensed dealers or from neighbor to neighbor. I would probably exempt immediate family members only from that.
Well, and one way to do that is a federal database, to have a 1-800. You know, we call to do credit checks on people before we issue them credit, mm-hmm. but there is no national database of crimes. You can't find out. Someone could have moved from Idaho to Virginia, committed a gun crime there, and we wouldn't know about it. Don't you think that a tax on guns, it doesn't have to be a very big tax, because I think it would be a small percentage of the total guns sold, attacks on guns to set up a national database. Frankly, if the seller should like it, because then if they call the database and the guy has a clean record, they're off the hook. They've done their job. Wouldn't you support such a database?
Well, I can't believe that we don't have a database of who's committed what crimes. What the heck is the FBI doing if they're not maintaining that kind
they're
of stuff?
They're state to state. They're not national. Yes, Virginia has a database and Maryland has a database.
And it's not all coordinated. I know the FBI has set the world records for a lousy computer system and wasting money on technology and things like that. But I'm astounded in learning for the first time that you tell me that they cannot coordinate all 50 states in the District of Columbia.
I think they can.
Perhaps even our commonwealths, you know, where you can call in and check who is guilty of what crime. That is news to me, and
I think they can coordinate it, and they haven't, and they need to.
Here's another problem. There is an InstaCheck system that licensed dealers can access, but no one else can.
Right.
Secondly, that database is very dependent on getting information in. At one point, I know that in the state of Ohio, it took nearly a year for information on felons to get into the system. And that's not the only problem. We have licensed dealers, almost all of whom are very law-abiding people. But we have a group of dealers. For example, the dealer who sold or misplaced, quote unquote, the gun that got into the hands of the DC snipers.
Right. Muhammad bought one from a dealer who I think should be punished.
Well, and the powers that be in the Republican Party mostly, and with their backing of the NRA, are preventing the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms or arm of our government from enforcing laws against unscrupulous dealers.
Karen, thank you very much for
your
call.
You're welcome.
I hope you'll call in again sometime. Mike, how do you respond?
Well, it's, you know, the people's right to bear arms is a bipartisan issue.
But we're not talking about their right to bear arms.
Right.
We're talking about selling guns to people who shouldn't have them.
Probably the primary defender of individual rights to own guns and critic of the jackbooted thugs over at ATF is John Dingell from Michigan, a prominent Democrat, senior committee chairman, et cetera. So to lay whatever difficulties
we see. Yes, there are some Democrats that I think need to support gun control that don't, but we know that it's mostly the Republicans. And let's take it away from partisanship for a minute. Right now, it can take up to 3 days to do a background check, even on the InstaCheck system. And as Karen pointed out, in Ohio and other states, it can take a year to get data in there. I think if we had the government will, and we had new legislation, and maybe even a new tax on guns, and I don't think it would cost that much, we could have a workable database, and I think you might just support that.
I don't have any reason to oppose requiring the state of Ohio or the other 49 states to input their data on a more timely basis. If they are taking felons convicted presumably of a firearms violation and not a crime of violence, something that would preclude them from owning a firearm and not getting that into the system on an expeditious basis, there should be something that requires them to do it.
Mike, we only have a few seconds left, but the only part of the Democratic plan I haven't mentioned is prescription drug bill. They want to modify the bill to allow the government to negotiate better prices and to allow people to buy drugs from places like Canada. I can only give you 10 seconds. Do you support that part of the Democratic plan or don't you?
I don't. And let me say that you accused me of supporting the entire PAYGO thing before, and I don't support all of that, and we'll discuss it next time.
Okay, that's fine. He doesn't support all of it, but I got to tell you, when the Democratic agenda gets this much support from a Republican sitting next to me, I think they got a good chance to take over in November. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening into The Inside Scoop. You can find out more about The Inside Scoop at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.